مولانا علي علي مولانا علي مولانا علي مولى علي علي مولى علي
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين وهو خير موفق ومعين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. Please say salawat.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأجل فرجهم.
لا سيما مولانا صاحب الزمان روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. السلام عليكم brothers and sisters. We don't have much time left. It's only about 15 minutes, 20 minutes left. Honestly, if it was up to me, I would have just asked them to continue playing my brother, and I would have enjoyed that better. I'll be continuing on a topic I started the night before last. The topic of liqa'ullah. As I mentioned, the Quran in the riwayat of the Ahlul Bayt describe the end that we will achieve in the hereafter in various forms. One form, which is pretty ubiquitous in the Quran and is prevalent in the Quran, is to say that if we do good in this world, we will be allowed entry into gardens that are abundant with sensual pleasure. That's one way the Quran puts it, and in many verses of the Quran, this is how it is described, and that is because that is what most people relate to. That is the incentive most people need to do good actions. Another way, however, that final end of perfection is described in the Quran and in the riwayat related from the Ahlul Bayt is liqa'ullah, to see God, to behold God, to discern the beauty of God. When we read the verses of the Quran and the riwayat of the Ahlul Bayt, the understanding we come to is that this seeing God, this beholding God that is mentioned in the Quran and in the riwayat, is not a figurative expression. It is not a metaphorical illusion to say, eating the grapes of heaven is figuratively referred to as seeing the beauty of God. That is a wrong understanding. In fact, the riwayat of the Ahlul Bayt and the verses of the Quran, when they say viewing the beauty of God, when they talk about beholding the face of God, they mean it literally, not figuratively, but literally in a metaphysical sense, not in a physical sense. Obviously, they don't mean that we can see God with the eyes of our physical eyes, the eyes and our physical faces. That would be absurd. But they do mean that we can see God and that we can behold God and behold the beauty of God with the eyes of our hearts. And I mentioned the riwayat from Imam Sadiq, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure it's from Imam Sadiq, that the true Shi'as are those who have four eyes. trucius, or those who have four eyes. Two eyes, two physical eyes, two eyes on their heads, and two eyes in their hearts. Those are the eyes of the hearts are the eyes with which we view and we behold the beauty of God. How is this lofty end, this lofty goal, how can it be achieved? It can be achieved through self-knowledge. It can be achieved through ma'rifatun nafs. The Prophet has said, "Man arafa nafsa faqad arafa rabbah." One who knows oneself knows God. One who knows oneself knows God. It sounds really nice, but what does it actually mean? I referred to the verse that is commonly referred to as Ayatul Mithaq, the verse of the pledge. And I remarked that the answer to this question, to the question of how liqa Allah can be achieved through ma'rifatun nafs, lies in this very enigmatic verse of the Quran. There was a few questions regarding this verse, so I thought it would be right or inappropriate to consider these questions and then move on with our discussion. Verse 172, Surah A'raf. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. وإذ أخذ ربك من بني آدم من ظهورهم ذريتهم وأشهدهم على أنفسهم ألست بربكم قالوا بلى شهدنا أن تقولوا يوم القيامة إنا كنا عن هذا غافلين. And when your Lord took from the children of Adam their children and made them bear witness against themselves, saying, "Am I not your Lord?" And they said, "Yes, we bear witness, lest they should say on the day of judgment that they were ignorant of this." In other words, the literal meaning of this verse is that as some riwayat interpret this, when we were motes in some previous primordial world, this is what some of the riwayat interpret this verse, God, in that world we were able to behold God. In that world, God told us, "Do you not see me?" We said, "Yes, we see you." And so those who go astray in this world, on the day of judgment, God will hold them accountable based on what we witnessed in that primordial world. This is the interpretation that some attribute to this verse based on some riwayat. But as I explained in the previous talk, in the previous speech on this topic, this is definitely an incorrect understanding of the verse. This is definitely an incorrect understanding of the verse. To say that there was a primordial world before this world in which we were able to behold God, and that primordial world is commonly called Alam Azhar. You might have heard this before. To say that we were able to behold God in that primordial world and that God would hold us accountable based on that experience that we had in that primordial world is definitely and without question an incorrect understanding of this verse. There are a number of reasonings we can provide why this understanding is incorrect. I will mention three of them only here. One is that if in fact we had experienced God in that world, and if in fact, as some riwayat tell us, we will go to hell or we will go to paradise based on the choice and based on the experience that we had in that world, coming into this world would be a total futile and worthless and senseless thing that God has done. Okay? If we experience God, and if we had a certain experience in that world, and we will be judged based on that experience, why then come into this world? We coming into this world would be totally in vain. And God does not do, God is Hakim, God is wise. He does not do anything in vain. That's one reasoning. Another reasoning is that when we read the verses of the Quran, when we read the riwayat of the Ahlul Bayt, it is common knowledge, it is obvious that when we are affected by nisyan, by forgetfulness, when we forget something, God does not punish us for that which we have forgotten. Those who've studied in the Hawza, they know, in the science of Usul, there's a topic about nisyan. When you forget something, God does not punish you for that which you have forgotten. Although you might have to make up for it in certain cases, but you don't get punished for it. Okay. So if God is so wise and just and so loving that He has said that in this world, if there are certain ahkam that you forget and that you do not do, I will not punish you for it, how is it that God can hold us accountable for a pledge that we've done in a previous world that no one remembers? It's totally absurd. Okay. That's the second reasoning. The third reasoning is that, again, it's common knowledge when we read the verses of the Quran and the riwayat from the Ahlul Bayt, they all direct us to act righteously in this world. To act righteously in this world. If our affair was predetermined in a primordial world, it would be senseless, it would be meaningless to order us and to obligate us to act righteously in this world. Therefore, this interpretation of Ulama Zar, that there, it's a very common interpretation, I know. You might have all heard of it, and you might have all held this belief that this verse, the Ayah Misaq that I just read to you, actually means that there was an Ulama Zar, that we experience God, that we beheld God, and that we will, that somehow predetermined our choice in this world. Based on these reasonings, and there are other reasonings as well, based on these reasonings, this interpretation of this verse, of Ayah Misaq, of the verse of pledge, of the verse of the pledge, is definitely wrong. So what does it mean? To understand this verse correctly, we need to have a correct understanding of the world of existence, of God's creation. How is the world? What is the structure of the world? The world is a hierarchically arranged whole, that comprises multiple levels of existence. Last night I enumerated and I mentioned four realms of existence that the philosophers identify: Alam al-Nasut, which is the material world, Alam al-Malakut, Alam al-Jabarut, on top of that, in Alam al-Lahut, which is the realm of the essence of God and nothing else. These are the four general realms that the philosophers enumerate, and there are multiple other realms within these realms. So the world is a hierarchy of existence comprising multiple levels of existence. Now, how does this world function? How does this world work? This world, with its multiple levels, is an emanation emanating from God. This world is emanated from God. God is constantly and continually granting existence to this world. Therefore, all of existence, from the highest realm of existence, from the highest angelic realm, to to the basest realm, which is the realm of the material world, are contingent on God. They are عَيْنُ الرَّبْتِ إِلَى اللَّهِ, as the philosophers phrase this relation. عَيْنُ الرَّبْتِ إِلَى اللَّهِ. Our existence is nothing but the emanation coming from God. عَيْنُ الرَّبْتِ إِلَى اللَّهِ. And therefore we are, in a metaphysical sense, we are all connected to God. So, as opposed to what we perceive with the physical eyes, that the world is a multiplicity of beings, all disconnected and disjointed, what actually the case is that we are all connected with God. That is why the Quran says, هُوَ الْأَوَّلُ وَالْآخِرُ وَالْظَاهِرُ وَالْبَاطِنُ. God is the first and God is the last. God is the manifest and God is the hidden. The reason for this expression is that all of the world is an emanation of God. What does that imply with regard to us? It implies that our being, within our being, within our hearts, we have a way to God. In fact, our existence is actually that connection with God. That constitutes our very existence. And therefore, on a subliminal level, on a subconscious level, we all know God. And it is this subconscious and subliminal acquaintance with God that we can nurture and nourish on the way to becoming, or on the way to gaining irfan. If it were not for this awareness, if it were not for this acquaintance with God, this subliminal and subconscious acquaintance with God that we all have, irfan and improving spiritual would be impossible. It is this connection with God that enables us to ascend. And it is because of this connection that nowadays even psychologists affirm that all people are inherently inclined to believe in God. It's because our essence calls for it. It's because our essence is connected with God. They say that there is, some psychologists say that there is a gene called the God gene within the human being that compels one to believe in God. This God gene that psychologists identify is actually a material manifestation of that metaphysical and spiritual connection with God. And it is because of this that psychologists say that those who believe in God are emotionally and psychologically better off than those who don't believe in God. So, the point is that we are connected with God and that this is what the Ayah Misaq is saying. That within the deepest recesses of our hearts, we know God. We are in contact with God. So the question is this: if we are actually in contact with God, why can't we see Him? Why is this awareness of God, why is it not conscious? Usually in this world, when you're connected with someone, when you're related to someone, okay, when you see someone, when you're in contact with someone, okay, you see them. When there is familiarity, when there is acquaintance, when there is contact between two persons in this world, you see that person, you behold that person. Okay? So how is it, if in fact this interpretation of the verse that I'm giving you is a correct interpretation, and this is the interpretation that Ayatollah Misbah offers, Why do we not see God? The reason that we don't see God is that we are blinded and we are veiled by veils, by hujub, that blind us to seeing God, that prevent us from seeing God. Hujub, veils. This term hujub is something that recurs over and over again in the riwayat from the Ahlul Bayt, especially the riwayat that bear on spiritual matters. So we are in contact with God, but we are blinded at the same time by veils, by certain hujub that prevent us from seeing God. What are these hujub? These hujub are nothing but the various levels of existence that I talked about. The various levels of existence. As I mentioned to you, the world is arranged in hierarchically ordered levels of existence. A natural consequence of this hierarchy is that the beings and the creatures in each level are blinded by being in that level from seeing the higher levels of existence, seeing it in a conscious way. Why? Because by the fact of being in that lower level of existence, their existence is not broad enough and vast enough to encompass and comprehend the higher realms of existence. So this is a necessity. The fact that we are blinded and veiled from seeing God in a conscious way is a necessity of the structure of the world, and it's also a blessing. If in fact the world were such that the light of God would directly illuminate all beings, brothers and sisters, everything would perish. You only need to read the verse of the Quran that refers to Hazrat Musa's experience to know that this will happen, that if in fact the light of God would shine unmediated on everything, the entire world would perish. Why? Because the world does not have the capacity to withstand the unmediated light of God. That's why there is this hierarchy. The light of God must go through that. Through this hierarchy must be diluted as it comes down. Okay. Verse 143, Surah A'raf. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. ولما جاء موسى لميقاتنا وكلمه ربه قال رب أرني أنظر إليك. When Moses came to see us, that is God, and his Lord spoke to him, Moses said to God, "O God, please show yourself to me." Rabbi, arini anzur ilayk. Qala lan tarani. You will not see me. Walakin anzur ila al-jabal fa in istaqarra makanahu fa sawfa tarani. But look at this mountain. In a few seconds, I'm going to manifest myself to this mountain. Now what that means, we actually don't know. But we know for a fact that God said to him, I'm going to manifest myself to this mountain. If it remained intact in its place, then you will be able to see me. God revealed himself to the mountain. The mountain perished and collapsed. And Moses fainted. That's the consequence of the unmediated light of God. So there is this hierarchy of existence. The light of God must be mediated through these various stages of existence. That's a necessary fact of existence. It cannot be otherwise. And these very levels are the hujub themselves. these very levels or the hujub. How much time do we have left? Or is time up? Thank you. Anyone? Any idea?
15 minutes.
15? Okay, alhamdulillah, that's enough time. All right, so these multiple levels of existence are the hujub. Being in a particular level of existence bars us from viewing the higher levels of existence. Now, there is one particular being in this scheme of things. There's one particular being in this world that has been created by God in a way that he can actually travel through these various stages of existence. And that being is none other than us, the human being. Although the angels are higher than us, but they have to, if they come into this world with a fixed position. وَمَا مِنَّا إِلَّا وَلَهُ مَقَامٌ مَعْلُومٌ. God in the Quran narrates the angels saying this sentence, this describing, characterizing themselves by this sentence. وَمَا مِنَّا إِلَّا وَلَهُ مَقَامٌ مَعْلُومٌ. There is no angel but that he has a fixed stage. That's how angels are. That's how all animals are, except for the human being. The human being is such that he can remove the veils, remove the hujub, and ascend toward God in order to behold God. Now, there are two sets of veils. There are two sets of veils that prevent us from seeing God. Urafa refer to these two sets of veils as the hujub zulmani and the hujub nurani, or the hujub zulmaniya, the veils of darkness and the veils of light. The veils of darkness and the veils of light. What are these veils? The veils of darkness are actually the factors in the material world that prevent us from seeing God. These are the hujub zulmaniya. Hujub nuraniya are the higher realms of existence that prevent us from seeing God. If we want to move towards seeing God, which the Quran encourages us to do, if we wish to experience the unspeakable pleasure of beholding the face of God, we have to remove the veils of darkness and the veils of light. We have to remove the veils implied by this material world and the veils involved by the higher realms of existence. There is an interesting account from Allama Tabatabai. Once he was asked, has there been an experience or has there been an account where you have, I can't say regretted, but you have, it has left a very hurtful and negative effect on you? Allama Tabatabai was asked that question. His reply was, yes, I have had such an experience that to this day the bitter taste that it left on me still lingers in my spiritual palate, still lingers with me. That experience was Allama Qadhi, Allama Tabatabai's teacher, had told Allama Tabatabai that when you start engaging in spiritual practices, there will come a stage where you will be approached by certain spiritual beings. Make sure you neglect those spiritual beings. Make sure you neglect those spiritual beings. So Allama Tabatabai says, I was praying and I was engaged in dhikr and invocations of God. And lo and behold, a huri came to me. Huri is not a being from this world. Huri is a being from Alamul Mithal. Okay. As soon as I saw the huri, she was so beautiful that I was compelled, or I was really inclined to look up and look at her. But all of a sudden I remember what Allama Qazi had told me. So I totally disregarded the huri. I continued my dhikr. I continued my invocation of God. The huri came from another direction, approached me from another direction. Again, I ignored her. Again, she approached me from the front, from the right, from the left, and from the front. Again, I ignored her. After approaching me 3 or 4 times, she left. She left heartbroken. In that feeling that I have with me, that I broke the heart of a huri, that is still with me. This account that I related to you was to show to you what the Hujub Nurani means. Hujub Nurani are the beings of the higher realms of existence, those like Allama Tabatabai and Allama Qadhi, who are striving to behold the beauty of the face of God. They cannot be distracted by even luminous beings like huris. It is for this reason that in the riwayah that I read to you day before yesterday about Hazrat Shu'aib crying and losing his sight 4 times, and after the 4 times, God spoke to him and said, "What's going on? Don't you want to stop crying?" And he said, "No, I won't stop crying until you show me your face. I'm not crying because I want to go to hell, because I'm afraid of hell. I'm not crying because I want to go to paradise. I'm crying because I want to behold you. I want to see you. And I will be restless until I see you." The awliyaullah, they do not care for huris, for the blessings, for the bounties, for the beings of Alamul Mithal or of paradise. What they have their eyes set on is viewing and beholding the beauty of God. And it is for this reason that in Du'a-i Kumail we read over and over again that Imam Ali says, "If you send me to hell, my concern is not that I will be burning in hell. My concern is that I will not be beholding your face." So awliyaullah, they're not concerned with the bounties of the higher realms of existence. Their aim and their goal is Laqa'ullah. And therefore they must rend, they must remove, and we must remove, inshallah, if we are striving towards Laqa'ullah, we must remove the veils of darkness and the veils of light. That is the direction that we must take. And the path is in our soul. The path is in our soul. We are all connected with God. God is, we have a way to God through our hearts. And we must ascend through that path to arrive at that station where we can, inshallah, behold the beauty of God. How is it possible to ascend to that station? How is it possible to rend the veils of light and the veils of darkness? Inshallah, we'll consider that in the next session. We ask God, by the right of the five sacred personages, by the right of the Prophet, by the right of Ali, who was struck on his head on this night, we ask God, by the right of Imam Hassan, by the right of Imam Hussein, by the right of Sayyidah Zahra, that he would help us, that he would aid us and assist us in ascending through this path, inshallah, and in purifying our souls, inshallah ta'ala. Please say a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjal farajah.
Ya Amir al-Mu'minin, Ya Amir al-Mu'minin, يا أمير المؤمنين سلام الله عليك, سلام الله عليك يا أمير المؤمنين يا مولى الموحدين يا سيد الأوصياء On this night, our first Imam, our beloved Ali, was struck in the masjid with the sword of Ibn Muljam on his head. While he was prostrating before God, as he stood up for the truth, for the haq, for justice, all the powers of injustice stood up against him. But brothers and sisters, let me assure you that on this night, he actually did not feel any pain. It was all pleasure and good tidings for him. As soon as he was struck on the head, he cried out, Fuztu wa Rabbil Ka'bah. Fuztu wa Rabbil Ka'bah. Brothers and sisters, for Imam Ali tonight is a night for celebration. But do you know when, on what day, what time was for Imam Ali the true time of grief and mourning? The true time of grief and mourning for Imam Ali was after the demise of the Prophet. When he was taken out of his house by force.
when he was taken by force out of his house to go toward the masjid, and Sayyid Fatima followed him and grabbed his dress and cried out, "Leave him alone." And what did the enemies of God do? The enemies of God hit her on her arm so bad that she fell on the ground and she couldn't hold to Imam Ali any longer. And Imam Ali couldn't do anything. He just had to stand there and watch his wife being beaten by the enemies of God. سلام الله عليه سلام الله عليه ولعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين